steps to the mic with a boom ping ping. Wisdom sharper than a bee's fierce sting. Words like fireflies that light the night. He turns the dark into blazing bright. Boom ping ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom ping ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king, oh, the airwaves king. The ground unveils the truth where lies abound. Politics, justice, social streams. He molds the chaos into dreams. No silence here, just the sound of change. Boom, ping, ping, rearrange ya. Boom, ping, ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom, ping, ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king or the airwaves king. Through the static, through the noise, he amplifies the people's voice. Boom, ping, ping, like a heartbeat's call. He's got the wisdom to break down walls. Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday, August 5th, 2026, where all eyes are on the state of Michigan, where it appears Democratic Socialist, or maybe I should just call him a progressive, Abdul El-Sayed, will defeat Representative Haley Stevens in Michigan's marquee Democratic primary race for the U.S. Senate. There is something like a 14,900 vote lead as we speak for Abdul El-Sayed, with a number of votes still to be counted from Wayne County, which encompasses the city of Detroit, where it appears Haley Stevens may pick up some votes, but it may not be enough as of right now. The 1-point lead that Abdul El-Sayed has over Congresswoman Stevens very well could be enough. And so you are probably thinking, is this potentially the future of the Democratic Party, where those who are more centrist, who are more moderate, those, dare I say, who are establishment, may be removed from the party in favor of legislators and senators, members of Congress, and even governors who are decidedly much more to the left? I see it a little bit differently, and I know that there are some folks who are very, very happy and celebratory about that win in Michigan. I'd imagine my producer is likely one of them, as he had made it clear that his support was behind Abdul El-Sayed in a contest that it appears that he will win, which is a tremendous victory for the far left in America. However, there are some things to take into consideration, and I also want to tie what this primary victory may mean for the governor's race here in Wisconsin, because we have a very similar situation. So you have Haley Stevens, who is a member of Congress who represents roughly the same amount of people as our Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. As you all know, David Crowley would probably be considered a moderate or a centrist, and certainly a part of the establishment. And he currently represents an amount of people that is, of course, similar to what the losing candidate in Michigan is representing, somewhere is around 1 million people, give or take. And then we have Francesca Hong, who has been leading, if not dominating, in the polls since polling started in the race for governor. I think the writing is on the wall. There also is a story that I'm going to share with you in just a little bit where David Crowley is admitting that he believes that his received endorsement from Governor Tony Evers came too late. If we flip back across Lake Michigan and go to the state of Michigan, Haley Stevens also said that her endorsement, or her being endorsed by the previous Democratic governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, which came last month, was also a little bit too late. And so for those who are celebrating and rejoicing, exercise a bit of caution. And so there's something I've talked about over the last couple of programs, and it's called the wisdom of crowds. And when large groups of people make a decision, that decision oftentimes is one that can defy conventional wisdom, and it also is a smarter decision usually than any one particular expert could ever predict. Primary elections are different. If I'm going to use a sports analogy, which I don't do very often, a primary victory for a far left candidate is like winning a single playoff game and thinking you have won the championship, thinking you have won the pennant, thinking you have won the Stanley Cup, thinking you have won the World Cup when you've only won a playoff game. Something else to be noted. I come to find out there are 8.3 million registered voters in the state of Michigan. It's a lot of registered voters. Michigan has more registered voters than Wisconsin has population, basically by a factor of two. A lot of people are registered to vote in the state of Michigan. Yesterday's election in this midterm preview primary election is going to see record turnout for a midterm primary election in the state of Michigan. Please keep in mind that there are better than 8 million registered voters in the state of Michigan. Yesterday's election, which is actually still going on right now because there are some votes to be counted out of Wayne County, which encompasses most, if not all, of Detroit. Turnout's going to be about 30%, potentially as high as 34%. There is no wisdom in that crowd. While the victory might echo loudly for some, especially those on the far left that believe that that is the direction not only the Democratic Party needs to go in, but that is the political direction that the nation needs to go in to combat and to undo some of the worst policy decisions coming out of the Trump administration, 70% of the people in the state of Michigan did not cast a ballot in this election. It's very, very deceiving. And people will take this victory and try to apply it to the wisdom of crowds when the crowd has not voted yet. Here is the risk that we run. So Mitch McConnell is essentially no longer a factor in the U.S. Senate. So the Republicans currently have, and I'm going to include Mitch McConnell in this count, they have 53 seats in the U.S. Senate. The U.S. Senate is 100 senators. The Democrats have 46, plus they have Bernie Sanders, who is technically an independent, but does caucus with the Democrats. So all in all, the Democrats have 47 seats in the U.S. Senate, and the Republicans have 53. Currently, right now, as it stands, the state of Michigan has two Democratic senators. If El Sayed loses to a Republican in the fall, and I can't predict Michigan's politics because I can barely predict Wisconsin's politics, not only will the Democrats set themselves back in their quest to get a majority in the U.S. Senate, they're going to lose a seat to a conservative Republican for the next 6 years. So keeping in mind, the Democrats are at a disadvantage. They're at a deficit in the U.S. Senate, but nominating a far left progressive to run against a Republican when 70% of the people in the state of Michigan have registered voters have not voted yet is a calculated risk. Now, I don't want to take anything away from the victory because I do believe it speaks volumes to how a certain segment of voters in this country, whether it be Wisconsin with our governor's race or Michigan with the U.S. Senate race or a number of contests all over the country, I think there's a sentiment of how people are feeling about the conditions, and they may believe that a political extreme on the far left will combat that of what we are seeing on the far right. But at the end of the day, when cooler heads prevail in a system like America, a bipartisan, bicameral, constitutional republic that is just littered with capitalism, extremes do not work. They sound good. They provide all of the answers. Any question that you may have about any policy, there is going to likely be a response by progressives and democratic socialists, because it's easy to come up with a response. Oh, healthcare is too expensive? Make it free. Wages are too low? Raise them. Rich people have too much money? Take it. Education not doing so good? Fix it. Environmental hazards and the air is not clean and the water is not clean. Purify it. There's an answer to everything that plagues us. Can they accomplish those things legislatively? That is where the difficulty lies, because you can tell voters literally anything during the poetry of a campaign, especially if you are meeting voters where they're at. Data centers, horrible. Response, stop them. Don't build another data center. And then you'll have people to say, oh, I like that. I don't want a data center coming into my community. And there absolutely is one segment of the Democratic Party that is vehemently opposed to data centers. If you live in a rural area and you don't want all of your land being taken and all of your water being used, you don't want your utility bills to go up and your electricity usage to go up, not to mention all of the noise apparently the data centers make. If you have a candidate that is very ambitious, that is telling you and looking you directly in your eye and saying, we're going to stop these data centers from being built, why wouldn't you support that candidate? It makes a lot of sense. It's very, very simple to comprehend. But legislating is a much, much different story. And for those that are interested and those that want to do a little more research and dig a little bit deeper, also, let me say this. Whenever somebody says do your research, look, I don't like that cliche because most people don't know how to do research. To most people, doing research is just Googling some stuff. But a lot of times Google is just going to feed us answers that we are expecting, or feeding us answers that are already aligned with what our current thinking is. Research would be, what are actual policy achievements? What are actual legislative victories, bills passed and signed into law by this new, more left-leaning segment of the Democratic Party? How many of them have actually gotten elected in large contests around the country? Now, I will also say this. Mamdani in New York, that's a huge victory, whether he calls himself a democratic socialist or a progressive. That, I think that was motivating for an awful lot of people. But yesterday I went through the list of his campaign promises that made him a very attractive candidate to New Yorkers, especially post Eric Adams. Eric Adams was a disaster, which is a shame because he had a lot of promise. He was a centrist, moderate guy, had a great relationship with the police department. He also was real close to Donald Trump. And if I'm not mistaken, Donald Trump either endorsed Eric Adams or stopped just short of endorsing him, which doesn't help in a city like New York, because I don't know if you can get bluer and more liberal than New York City, which, let me remind you, is like 10 million people. New York is not an actual representation of what America is. It's like 750 different Americas. So the political decisions made by New Yorkers is not necessarily attributable to other parts of the United States, especially us here in the upper Midwest. But it's incredibly motivating for other folks who have left-leaning political proclivities. So I went through a list of some of the things that Mom Donnie said on the campaign trail. And there, of course, have been roadblocks and there have been log jams because legislating is different than campaigning. You can campaign on anything. And then once you get elected, you will see how incredibly difficult it is because you've got special interests. You've got lobbyists. And for some reason, we seem to forget about this thing that has been one of the largest impediments to Democratic policies going back since the parties did their realignment, starting in 1948 when the Democrats became the Dixiecrats, which then became the modern incarnation of the Republicans. So any Democratic policy in the modern era has faced considerable obstacles because of this thing. And the thing is called the Republican Party. And so you may hear a fantastic serving buffet, if you will, of left-leaning policies that answer every single question about every single thing that is wrong or misaligned with America. Just remember, there's going to be opposition and some pretty dug-in opposition to some of those policies. So I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back. I want to share with you something that David Crowley said, and I hope this is not foreshadowing of what is to come in 6 days when the overwhelming majority of voters in the state of Wisconsin will cast their ballots. We have had some early votes being cast in the city of Milwaukee. In fact, yesterday was the highest number of early votes that have been cast since this current election cycle has started. Not sure entirely what that means, but at least more people are paying a little bit more attention as we grow closer to the August 11th election. So we're going to talk about David Crowley, who I think is actually here in the building because I got a notification that he is here. He's probably at one of these other radio stations defending his campaign and why voters should select him, especially if you're one of those undecideds. I'm going to take a break, going to come back, going to chat, going to talk about the things, going to get into some details. And, of course, your questions and comments, my goodness, they're always welcome. Even if your questions and comments don't make sense to anyone except you, for some reason, we will honor and entertain them here. 833-212-1017. 833-212-1017. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes, exclusively on 101.7 The Truth in Milwaukee. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Should I pull up and remind you? Took me long enough to find you. That my money, Carolina. Blow, blow, blow.
Wisconsin is just 1 week away from the election, and there are four Democratic candidates for governor still vying for the nomination. Of all the things that have happened during this particular Wisconsin primary, this is the one that is probably the most shocking to me, that even with 1 week, less than a week, until the election, there's no commitment to support the candidate who has been endorsed by the current Democratic governor. Now, we've talked to Kelda, we've talked to Joel Brennan. Some time ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, I did see a very narrow path for Joel Brennan, and I thought there was some opportunity to get agenda items that are important to African Americans, especially in Milwaukee, to have those agenda items at least make their way into this gubernatorial contest. But it appears that Joel Brennan is going to be as far away from victory as Kamala Harris was when she ran for president in 2024. So that plan isn't exactly going to work out. Kelda Royce, who is a state senator representing Dane County and Madison, she also is polling still at 2-ish%, still in single digits, and she has not decided to pull out of the race and endorse David Crowley either, because I firmly believe that every time Kelda looks in a mirror, And I don't know if there's a mirror that she walks past and doesn't stop and gaze at. I think she sees a governor. I believe she actually does. And so she's not going to drop out of the race either. And so when we do our autopsy of this very unusual Democratic primary that we're seeing here in Wisconsin, we're going to take those things into consideration. There were too many Democrats in the race for too long. When Francesca Hong was able to solidify her lane and galvanize an incredible amount of grassroots support, while the other Democrats were fighting over their share of centrist and moderate Democratic voters, Francesca Hong had a very, very clear path to victory because her supporters are very unique in their political understandings and their political wants and wishes. And only she can meet their particular and specific needs politically. Those people are not likely to drift to somewhere that's further to the right. They're not likely to say, oh, well, my second choice is probably going to be Joel Brennan. Oh, my second choice is going to be David Crowley. I don't know if they had a second choice. And I can take a play out of history, a scene that was set about a decade ago. Bernie Sanders supporters weren't supporting Hillary Clinton, and they made the case as to why they would not, because her politics do not represent the direction that they want their elected officials to go in. And Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton were about as different of people and politicians as you probably could find. And so there was a phenomenon that took place. There was this third party candidate, Jill Stein. And here's the thing. We've seen third party candidates before. They are an alternative. I'm not sure if the alternative that they represent is reasonable, but it is a place where protest votes can go. You guys remember an election from a very long time ago. In fact, it was 26 years ago, but I remember it like it was yesterday. It was the presidential election of the year 2000, in which Al Gore and Joel Lieberman were the Democratic nominees, Al Gore being the vice president for two terms under what I would call a relatively successful two terms of William Jefferson Clinton, challenging the Republican nominees for president and vice president, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Then there was this fellow who represented the early incarnations of what would turn into more legitimate third party candidates. I believe his name was Ralph Nader. And Ralph Nader represented a political ethos that did not necessarily align with everything the Republicans believed and did not align with everything that the Democrats believed as well. It seemed at the time, and the data that we had back then, nothing even remotely close to what we have now. The way we can analyze elections, the way we can get exit data, the way we have polling data, everything is mechanized, everything is artificially intelligent now. I believe that the data that we get about voters, issues, and elections is far more accurate now than it was 26 years ago. Because back then, Google was not the kind of factor that it was. I remember doing what it was called, it was new at the time, internet organizing, where if you had somebody's email address, and everybody didn't have an email address 26 years ago in the presidential election of the year 2000, but if you had email addresses, a collection of email addresses, you would use those email addresses like home addresses, and you could send people campaign correspondences via email. That had never happened before. It was a new and revolutionary time in American politics. But my, oh my, has this stuff evolved now? You got half of the commercial that you will see, not necessarily the ones that you saw in this primary, but the ones you will see from August 11th through November. Half of them are going to be made with artificial intelligence. Tom Tiffany has a damn commercial where the cow is not even a real cow. It's an artificial cow. Probably gives artificial milk. But at the time in the year 2000, Ralph Nader was a choice for voters who typically would vote for a Democrat. Ralph Nader took maybe about 2% of the votes that we believe at the time probably would have gone to Al Gore and Joe Lieberman, and ultimately it was a very, very contentious race. In fact, when I went to bed that night, we had one winner of the contest. When I woke up the next morning, we had another president that was declared the winner. And then, of course, it was settled in the U.S. Supreme Court. There were still votes and ballots that were uncounted in Broward County, which we know were Democratic votes that would have favored Al Gore and Joe Lieberman, and ultimately that was a contest that was decided by the Supreme Court when I believe George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were up by something like 531 votes, and they called the whole damn election. And it was such a debacle and such a fiasco. The first thing, the very first thing, that was done by the new Bush and Cheney administration, because they knew they stole the election, is they sent American stimulus checks with a surplus that had been built up by the Clinton-Gore administration, because they knew that they stole the election. And a lot of people in this country were very angry. In fact, I can remember some of the speeches that were given by members of the Congressional Black Caucus at the time. They were crying foul, and they were not ready to embrace George W. Bush as the president of the United States and to quiet all of that political noise. Because when a president first gets elected, that is when their approval ratings are supposed to be the highest. That is when their political agenda is the strongest and oftentimes gets the most traction when they first get elected. It's why Donald Trump expended whatever political capital he had on the one big beautiful bill, which didn't turn out to be so beautiful. I don't think it was all that beautiful. And it makes me wonder that if we are going to see a repeat of history, because history is oftentimes the prologue, it sets the stage of what is often to come. In the event that Tom Tiffany gets elected governor, the surplus that we have here in Wisconsin, and in the event that Tom Tiffany gets elected governor and there's some kind of malfeasance that takes place in our election, because I don't put anything past Trump, because what I have come to find out about him, which is a lot, no one can stop him with anything that he wants to do. Maybe the courts will intervene at some point, but for the most part, he can say and do anything. He can weaponize his Department of Justice. He can weaponize the whole of the federal government, and no one really says or does anything. And in the event that Tom Tiffany finds himself on the winning end of our contest, that's going to take place the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. That's a rule of thumb in case you ever want to know when an election is. It's the first Tuesday after the first Monday. Don't know who came up with that. Sounds like something old-timey like Benjamin Franklin.
We will have the election on the first Tuesday after the first Monday following the first Saturday and Sunday.
Makes no sense. Tom Tiffany will steal this damn election and then give us the surplus to try and calm us down by sending us all checks. From CBS 58, Wisconsin is just 1 week away from an election, and there are four Democratic candidates for governor still vying for the nomination. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley says while he's grateful to have Governor Tony Evers' endorsement in the race for Wisconsin governor, Crowley admits he wishes it had come sooner. I'm going to pause there, take a break, and pick it right back up. Eyes are still on Michigan, where a nail-biter of a contest where Abdul El Sayed, who does represent the left flank of the Democratic Party, did beat, apparently, Representative Haley Stevens, who represents a much more centrist, moderate wing of the Democratic Party. And, of course, Abdul El Sayed will advance to November to run against a Republican candidate named Mike Rogers, who, of course, has the backing of President Donald Trump. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. I'll be back shortly.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Don't need a name and bright lights. You're a rock star. In some tinfoil with a glass pipe. Is your guitar? Now, yes, it is.
Our phone number, if you're so inclined, if you want to call it or text it or whatever you want to do, is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. Talking about a decidedly leftward shift in the Democratic Party, at least in a primary, but we've seen this before. Bernie Sanders did very, very well in primary election states back in 2016 and was actually doing very, very well in primary election states in 2020 because it was a short-lived campaign because Bernie was talked off the cliff not to run because the Democratic Party needed to line up behind a candidate that could actually win and defeat Donald Trump. And we resigned to the fact that it was Joe Biden, who was an old man. He was old then. He was old. He's been old for a long time. He was old when Barack Obama picked him to be his running mate, and then he got older. But Joe Biden represented a segment of the Democratic Party that can galvanize more support with what we call the wisdom of crowds. And this needs to be a lesson learned because people who are new to politics don't quite understand the cycles of it, because once they get in, they believe that the world is as idealistic politically as they want it to be. Campaigns are idealistic and as you want them to be. Getting elected is very, very different. The ideas are different. The strategies are different. The messaging is different. You're actually talking to different voters. If I asked some high school youngsters to vote for a class president, and let's say there's a lot of really qualified high schoolers that throw their hat in the ring to run for class president. They're solid on the issues of high school students. They want better school lunches. They want more after school programs. They might even want different subjects being taught. They may want more college readiness classes. These high schoolers that are running for student council might even want the trades introduced into their high school. Man, oh, man. And they're very articulate. They're very intelligent. And they run really solid campaigns for high school president. Okay? And there's a primary for high school president. You have seven candidates. Each of them just as qualified as the next, and they're giving their speeches and they're trying to convince their student body that they are the leader of this particular campaign in this race and they would be the absolute best choice. And then there is a vote. And the seniors of that particular school vote on a class president and there's a winner. Let's say it's a decisive victory and they give a speech and everybody's all fired up. But then there's one more election. It's one more. Those high school students, they spoke with their vote. They voted for a candidate that's going to take them into the future with all of these great ideas, everything from better school lunches to new classes and bringing in the trades or whatever the political issues are of these high schools. But then the vote goes to the larger community. You have the high school that voted, and that was the primary, but then the real class president of that senior class is going to be decided by the rest of the people in that community. Some are grandparents. Some are single parents. Some are 50 years old. Some are 70 years old. And what you will find is a totally different candidate may win. See, what Democratic Socialists do is they galvanize the seniors in high school, and they tell them to vote. But then when they win their primary with the support of the seniors in high school, the adults come to the general election and they may go in a completely different direction. This is what I want to prepare people for. There are no victories, whether it be Francesca Hong, whether it be El Sayed in Michigan, when only 30% of the people vote. Now, here's the hard part. How do you convince voters that did not vote in a primary election and might be distant as far as their political proclivities from the person that won the primary? Now, I know for a lot of people in this country and a lot of people listening to this program, your political affiliations are very loose. You vote on issues, and sometimes you don't vote at all if you don't like the candidates, because really nobody is stopping you from staying home on election day. It's also very easy to not vote at all and just to say, oh, I don't do politics. All politics are bad. Two wings on the same bird. It's very easy to do that. And quite honestly, about 40% of the American public says those exact same things when we have presidential elections. Please be clear and do not lie to yourself. 40% of the people in this country that could be voters do not vote for president for whatever reason. Therefore, we don't oftentimes get the best candidates nor the best winner because a large section, tens of millions of people, cast no vote. And I believe that if our voter turnout was higher, and here's another one for you, Wisconsin has some of the highest voter turnout in the country, and it's only 72% if we're lucky. That's still 28% of the people that can vote, that could vote, that just opt not to, and they're going to sell you on an excuse. And I don't go back and forth with those people. I only go back and forth with the people who want and demand real change, real social change, but won't do a single thing about it. I don't want to hear from you. Just keep it to yourself. Just be a private citizen and keep all that stuff to yourself, but don't tell us all of the things that you want and all the things that are messed up about the mayor and about the governor and about members of Congress, and you don't vote. Don't just relax. Just go and get yourself a Coca-Cola and drink it. Put a little ice in it. Maybe drink out of a straw. That's classy. And just sit there and drink your Coca-Cola. But it's a much different contest when a larger number of people who do have solid political affiliations vote. I'm a Democrat. I'll explain it to you if you got time. I think you can probably go back and listen to some of my other shows over the last, 15 years, and you'll be able to see why. Here is why it's difficult for me, because there's a real specific set of issues that I know have been plaguing the African-American community. And some of these issues have also plagued other people and other communities. And I have seen political remedy to those issues in other ethnicities and in other communities. So let's say the reparations is an issue. It's not really an issue for me because I don't know if black people would be ready for the backlash that we would receive if we ever got reparations. But I know that the Japanese, who were interned for just a little bit, just a little while, not long, they got reparations. So they were made whole, right? So there was a wrong. They were taken against their will, and they were held captive for no fault of their own. And then America was like, oh, we're sorry. Here's a whole bunch of money for your inconvenience. So I'm giving that as a simple, easy to understand example of how there was a problem and there was a political remedy to satisfy and to solve that problem. So we have seen other groups get political remedy. When it comes to issues that impact the African-American community, specifically our low levels of literacy and our children, and if that is allowed to persist, and as of right now it is, and fully funding public education is not going to be the answer, because fully funding public education has been something they have been saying since the 1980s, and we have more than tripled how much we invest in public school students, yet we still have a glaring disparity of black children that can't read. You know what that means? The next generation will be devoid of black people participating in the labor force because they didn't learn how to read when they were in third grade. And if that issue is not being addressed by any candidate, I don't care what your party is, if you have no solution, or if you won't even speak to it, or if you won't sketch out a plan, I'm not going to vote for you. I don't care where you are on climate. I don't care where you are on LGBTQ+IA issues. I don't care where you are on small business development. I don't care where you are on Canadian wildfires and clean drinking water and clean air. If you don't have a series of policy issues or platform items on that single issue, you have not earned my vote, and you're telling me that you don't want it. And I say, fair enough, because my vote is very sacred to me. You, as the candidate, are asking me for my vote. And if you are not providing me any food to feed myself politically with your campaign, then I'm just not going to eat. Let's talk to, actually, you know what? Vincent, hang on. I'm going to take a break. I'll come back and I'll chat with you. Talk to Vincent on the other side. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. I'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome back to the program. Our phone number is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. Let's talk to a patiently waiting Vincent. You're on 1017 The Truth. How are you?
Not that well, Sherwin, after the news that's coming out of Michigan. The thing is that in the beginning of the year, the Democrats had all this enthusiasm about flipping the House and the Senate coming up this fall. And with this results that are coming out of Michigan, they have made it a little harder for themselves. The fact is the Democrats had all the winning issues. The fact is the economy, the fact that health care is more expensive. The fact is this is ridiculous. Iran war and conflict, whatever you want to call it, that is continuing. But the fact is that now that Democrats have made it harder for themselves, especially in the Senate position, when you look at the results in Michigan. And so I don't understand what people want. You know, the fact is the Democratic Party has a problem that it has to kneel down to so many constituents. You have to deal with black folks. You have to deal with Hispanic folks. You have to deal with LGBTQ, STUV, whatever you want to call it, issues. You have to deal with the environment. You have to deal with young folks. You have to deal with elderly folks. You have to deal with poor folks. And the only issue that the Republicans have to deal with is saying, hey, all those folks that the Democrats have supporting them, just F them. And they end up winning. And that's the only issue that they have, and so now we come up to this point where now we have to deal with socialism in our party, and it's not a winning issue throughout these states, and it's said that the guy's not going to win. His chances of winning in Michigan is pretty slim, and so I don't understand what people want, you know, especially people that call themselves Democrats. Because you can't satisfy everybody, but you got to understand you have to win. You have to win in order to get something. And then when you continue to go down this road, the road that seems like the Democratic Party is going down with the socialism bit, it's just not going to work. And so it doesn't bode well for the governor's race here in Wisconsin. I hope some people come to their senses when it comes up to this election next week, and we can kind of turn this around. But the Democrats are about to blow this whole thing, and a second term, and I mean 2 years of Trump with a Republican Congress, he's going to be really unfettered. Just understand, he's going to be unhinged because he doesn't have anybody to try to stop him. And we need Democrats in Congress to win either the Senate or in the House in order to try to stop this idiot, because it's going to be Katie barred the door, and understand, you know, black folks, Hispanic folks, young folks, whoever. If Tom Tiffany becomes the governor of the state, get ready, it's going to be Katie barred the door again. So we need to start thinking about how are we going to live our lives? Because the fact is, elections are going to be curtailed. The fact is, they're going to be taking away your right to vote. They're going to be doing all these other things, and so it's ridiculous. You know, the Democratic Party just they got too many factions that they got to deal with. It's just amazing to me, and nobody wants to come together and win.
Thank you, Vincent.
All right, sure.
Appreciate your call. Vincent raises some valid concerns. They're not even following who the godfather of the modern incarnation of democratic socialism is. When Donald Trump is at his worst, and when we feel he can go even further, you don't combat his extremism with other extremism. You have to combat his extremism with common sense and pragmatism. That's why Bernie Sanders dropped out in 2020. He was like, I'm too extreme. We need someone that can actually beat Donald Trump. Bernie Sanders said, I'm going to get out of this race. I'm going to throw my support behind Joe Biden. And it made sense because Joe Biden won that election. Bernie Sanders knew that he would just muck everything up. He was not the answer. His policy ideas, it was not the time for them. The focus was on stopping Donald Trump. And when the larger crowd speaks in a general election, Bernie Sanders would have lost the presidency had he gotten the nomination. We know that. And Donald Trump would have been unhinged. Now, I guess the good news is we'd be done with Donald Trump now because he would have termed out in 2024. But that doesn't mean that J.D. Vance wouldn't be the president right now. And I find it funny and I find it ironic that Democratic socialists and their supporters, who are just some of the most insufferable human beings, who just, they throw bombs at everybody. Now they want everybody to come together behind them. See, there are consequences to their words and how they are very disrespectful. They really are, because they see their way and they don't see any other perspectives. And if you're establishment or if you're moderate, you are the problem. No, the problem is Republicans, but they don't see that. And anyone who seeks to be, matter of fact, anyone who speaks on behalf of the larger group of voters, general election voters, gets shouted down. Oh, you just wait. You just wait. I don't think that David Crowley is going to be successful. He's basically admitting it in this article that appears via CBS58.com. He wished that he would have gotten Tony Evers' endorsement sooner. Had David Crowley, when he got in the race September of last year, had Tony Evers endorsed him then, oh, this thing would be over. Mandela wouldn't have gotten in. Sarah Rodriguez probably would have gotten in. And, of course, Kelda, because why not? But David Crowley would have had all of the time of this election cycle to communicate his policy stances and how he would be a continuation of the policies that were successful during two terms of an Evers administration, but everything got all messed up. And they did too much agreeing with one another, trying to play nice, and I think that that's ultimately going to be one of the reasons why this election cycle will go down in history, because they didn't challenge the independence of the Democratic Socialists, whose policies are difficult to bring to fruition, especially because her legislative record does not show that she can bring the policies and ideas that she had in Wisconsin State Assembly to fruition and get them signed by a Democratic governor. But the irony is that you are going to see, because one thing I know about, and this goes back to the Bernie Bros of 2016, they weren't coming together with anybody. They weren't coming together to support a moderate, centrist Hillary Clinton. No way. They'd vote third party first. Yet they want a tremendous amount of support from the larger crowd for their political agenda, even though Bernie Sanders said, I'm getting out of this race because we can't use my political mode of thinking and my policy ideas to beat Donald Trump. I'm getting out of the race and I'm going to support Joe Biden. And that's what worked. Francesca Hong is not going to get out of the race and say, you know what, we've got to beat Tom Tiffany. My political viewpoints are too extreme for an upper Midwestern state like Wisconsin that teeters back and forth between red, blue, and purple. She's not going to do that. But then her supporters are going to get even more outraged that people are not lining up behind her. And here's what I think. I think the Democrats need this loss. I think Tom Tiffany needs to get elected governor so we can go back to the drawing board and we can finally say that political extremes on one side does not beat political extremes on the other. So we need this loss in order to rebuild the party into something that can be durable. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour two.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.